The spiritual community is the wild, wild west. The absolute wild, wild west. At any moment, I was just like, we need someone to regulate some of what's going on. We have to. Like, I cannot believe that that this is just the way that it is. Because I recently had somebody join my mentorship program, right? And no names, no nothing. Because half the time, I don't even want to know the name. I genuinely don't want to know what's going on between you and your spiritual house. I try to get left out of their little situation. And this person comes and they tell me, like, you know, she had known another girl who was going through her initiation ceremony, and the priest who was leading them through that girl through the ceremony, that priest asked her to suck his dick. Yes, I kid you not, in the name of God. Oh, Jesus. Yes, asked him, told him that they need, yes, told that girl that throughout the ceremony, they were, it would have, like, that was something that needed to be done. And I was sitting here, and I was just like, what? And this girl, and I was sitting here, and I was just like, how many times? Because I have, I've heard these people, I've heard what they say, I've heard all of these little things and stuff, and this is not the first time I've heard stuff like this, I'm not gonna lie to you. Mm-hmm. Some of these dirty mofos out here in this world convincing these people that this is not just necessary. This is part of the course. This is normal. Mm-hmm. Man, I've heard of things with people going through spiritual marriages, right? You know how maybe the priest or priestess will marry someone to a spirit, quote unquote, but then. Now the priest or priestess embodies the spirit. And so, I don't know, I guess they're the living vessel. I guess they're the person who's hosting the spirit. I don't know exactly what they say to convince these people I'm not there. But all of a sudden they start saying things like, you know, you need to kiss me, to touch me, to sleep with me. And I'm like... I just like, and there's so much, like, there's so much misinformation. There's so many problems. There's like hidden under the surface, because some of these, there's so much misinformation that I feel like people feel like, well, I could just say anything, and if they believe it, like, let's see how far I can take this. Mm-hmm. And these poor people, they really don't know, and so they're just, and then they're a bit gullible. And so they believe it. They really believe these things.
It's complicated, right? I think it's a really layered and textured kind of thing, because on the one hand, you don't know what you don't know. And so if I don't know, then maybe this is what people do behind closed doors. It's so hush-hush. It's such a closed tradition. You know, we can't share our secrets. So maybe this is what other people had to go through. And because there is no regulation, there's no real true elder, one council of elders with integrity that you can go to and ask these questions. That is definitely a problem. The other thing is that there's, because of the lack of regulation, there is no standard even across houses. So even in the one tradition, right, people have their own rules in their own house. And it's like, how is that supposed to work? We're all supposed to be following the rules of Papa Bondié or Olodumare, right, or whomever, but you're doing it this way and you're doing it that way, so they spoke to you individually and gave you permission to do that. There's just too much freestyling going on. Mm-hmm. And then I think a lot of people come to spirituality or come to the work in desperation and crisis and need. And so, one, you're already not in your best state of mind, right, because you are in need, so your best skills are not with you. And then they come to you with reverence, right? I want to be respectful of you and your tradition. You have this title, Mambo, priestess, whomever. You're supposed to have a direct line to God. I don't want to offend you by asking too much, and I don't want you to turn me away because I need you now, so I'm down to do whatever. And then you mix that combination together, you got a gumbo of fuckery.
You know, and it goes farther than just, you know, the extreme examples that I gave. It goes like you're right, because I've heard other people come to me throughout, you know, teaching and mentorship and all that. And they'll be like, you know, I went to this mumble or unga, and, you know, some guy was telling me how he went to get a gat, you know, guard. And I think the whole purpose of it was for protection. And the mumble was like, yo, I'm going to need to like cut you or something or something like that. And he was just like, why, you know, what is the reason for this? I want to understand, kind of thing. And that's a completely valid question. If you cut me, I would like to know why. That makes sense, you know? But he was telling me how she reacted so, like, he acted like she was crazy. I mean, well, she acted like he was crazy for daring to ask, for daring to question why you would need to know. And one, on the one side of it, it's like these priestesses are like, I can't possibly compromise the secret. I can't possibly let this person know anything close to like what I'm doing, because then they might know the secrets and they can make money and they can do this and they can be the priestess. They want to gatekeep information. But on the other end of things, it's also the lack of respect for yourself, for someone like your client. It's like this person genuinely probably does not respect the clients that come before them all that much. Mm-hmm. They probably don't think that they're owed any kind of explanation. And the arrogance of some of these practitioners, bro, the arrogance of some of these practitioners.
You telling
no,
me?
No, it's just like, it's someone's whole body though, you know? Like it's their whole body, you know? Like, it's not like you're just, it's not like they came into your start talking about how do you do this for other people or anything. They're asking you what you're going to do to them. And I've seen it so many times where people are just like, you don't have even the right to question what I'm doing when it's my moment and my time to do what I need to do. You know, you should just be grateful that I've chosen to even do this. But you should be grateful I'm charging you $3,000 for this guide right now. Mm-hmm. And like, you're lucky to have me. Some people, they are no longer in service of others.
No, they're not. And I get it. You know, when I first started doing work for people, I had a real hard time naming my price. I still struggle with that sometimes, because I came into this to be in service of the people, to be in service of God, and because I know that it's what I'm here to do. But at the same time, this is not the olden days where people would take care of you. We have bills to pay, right? Before you did work for the community, they made sure that you were getting crops from their garden. They watched your babies. If you needed it, you were taken care of. We don't do that now, right? Money is our currency. And so you got to pay me. This is my livelihood. And if you got a problem with my prices, I'm going to speak for myself. You know, you got to take it up with God, because I have to sustain my life. When I try to go and get a regular 9-to-5, God snatches me right back out and says, this is your work. So if this is finna be my work, then that means you got to pay my bills, right? Mm-hmm. But I understand on the end of the practitioner, right? Where it's like, okay, I have to take care of my family, so I have to charge you these things. But then some people do go a little bit too far, and they do get drunk with it. They get drunk with the power, with the notoriety, the popularity. And then that's when you see the confusion.
I mean, yeah, it's, you know, price is something I've struggled with too. I remember when I first started, your mom actually used to get mad at me because I didn't charge what she thought I should be charging. She was like, chill. But like, I understand her perspective too, because like in Haiti, a lot of these practitioners, you know, they work with people differently. Each person has a different price. What they'll charge a foreigner is not what they'll charge, you know, their homie down the street, another Haitian like them who's in the struggle in the third world country. They're two prices. And it's like the foreigner will subsidize everything that the local person cannot pay and kind of bridge the gap for that person. And for some, you know, they really, a lot of people in Haiti are operating from a place of need. They're in a third world country. So it's like, if this is their chance to get something, they're not going to waste it by giving a fair price, because they don't know the next time something like this is going to come. So they have to, like, they have to get what they're going to get. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, you transition overseas into America, and there are different things that go into price, you know, because I live in South Florida. If you, the last 2 years, well, 3-4 years with this pandemic, the price of everything has skyrocketed. All right, I can't live in South Florida if I'm not charging something that's livable. And even then, my prices are honestly pretty good in comparison to what I've seen other people charge online. But I also get to a point where I also know that, like, where this is not really the end of it for me, you know? Like, no, for sure. Like, I asked myself, like, okay, if I'm really, like, my mentorship program, right? I'm like, if I'm really doing this to help people, is there a way that I could bridge the gap between what people can literally afford to pay and actually helping them? Because some people, they need help and they can't, they don't have much to give. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that I'm not going to eat, because I still have to. But, and so I try and, like, layer it. So, like, there is a version of the product for each kind of customer, whether you have thousands to spend or literally $17 to give, there's going to be something there. And, you know, it's crazy to me, because it is cheaper for me to teach you how to do what I do than it is to pay me to do it for you. Mm-hmm. Like, I will teach you to do it for yourself for less than I will charge you if you had me displace myself and do something for you. And sometimes other practitioners, they think I'm insane for doing this. They think I'm just like, no, they do. They think I'm like freaking crazy. They're just like, why would you do something like this? They'll never need you again. I'm like, first of all, you always gonna find someone who needs something. All right. Mm-hmm. This is a big, big world with a lot of people. And you're going to find someone who needs something, okay? And second of all, it's like, there's no need to keep someone in a perpetual cycle of need. Like, how long do you need to keep someone under your thumb in desperation for you, thinking you're the only thing that can save them? Like, sometimes that's like, how does that sit well with you? How? Especially in this line of work.
Yeah. I think some people, though, don't want that. Some people prefer to have the work done for them. Some people just don't have, we call it manya or ache. Some people don't have that in their hands, you know? So they're like, I did everything you said the way you said it, and I prayed the prayers and nothing happened. But when you do it, it works. And I'm like, well, okay, yeah, there is a difference, you know? But I think that there are, to your point, always a version. There is always some type of way that you can empower the client to not need to be tethered to you. But this is, it is a big world with a lot of problems. And this work, the more that I do it, the more that I lean in and I really kind of carve my lane, I realize how wicked it is. And when I was younger, I was having a hard time understanding why we lost it, right? So I guess we'll get into like a formal introduction, whatever. But when I was growing up, you know, I would see a lot of women who did the work. It was very commonplace to see them in my neighborhood, and they're all white, moving and grooving, helping folks. And then that stopped after a while. And when I started to reconnect with elders in my traditions, essentially the answer was this, like, working with people is the worst thing ever, right? They love you when they love you, then they hate you when they hate you. They try to take all your stuff and act like you didn't give it to them. And it's hard sometimes to stand in integrity with that, because it makes you bitter. And so they just stop working altogether. And so I think that our generation is trying to show up in a different way, bridging all the gaps and still having our integrity and not being burnt out because we understand self-care and blah, blah, blah. But I think we're also seeing, yeah, the elders were right. This kind of sucks sometimes.
The elders are right. Honestly, I am. No, I feel that. I feel that 100%. Because, you know, it's, and for the people, like you said, there's some people, they don't necessarily have the juice. I think, you know, no, I think everybody has a juice. I think everybody has a version of something, but not everybody is going to be as effective as everyone else. There are people who are truly anointed, so to speak. in a way that somebody else just isn't, which is cool. And there's a lot of frustration dealing with the people who aren't or have or don't or aren't interested in finding out if they are. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of frustration dealing with these people. I remember I was dealing with this lady, and she was a cool lady. Honestly, she wasn't that bad. You know, she never like disrespected me or anything, and she always like, you know, she was always paid me fair. Nothing. I never had a problem with her as a client, but it was difficult for me to work for her anyways, because she was constantly trying to get something that was not meant for her. You know, like it got to a point where I had to be like, hey, everything that we've tried to do, everything that we've made happen together, it's manifesting and it's doing it well, except for this one thing. Every single part of your life that I have touched, we have been able to figure out the way that we wanted to figure out. But when it comes to this one factor here, things just aren't aligning for us. So we got to be honest here. Like, I really don't think it's meant for you. I think you need to like reassess and turn away. But then it's just like they start looking at you like you really are God. Like you, it's, and you're supposed to like snap things into place. And you know, she never, like I said, she never disrespectful to me. You know, it's not that. But there, it came to a point where I'm just like, I need you to listen. And a lot of these people, they want a reality that I'm just like, I'm being honest with you. I'm not taking your money. I'm not saying like, hey, let's do one more angle. I'm not forcing you to do this. I'm telling you, like, we need to walk away from this. This is not meant for you. There are better things out there. We need to go after them instead. And there's so much of that with clients. It's like you could, even when they trust you to do what they ask you to do, they don't trust you the way that they need you to. And so I'm just like, if I'm gonna guide you, you need to let me.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I don't think that people, oh, child, we could talk about this forever. I think people really have a swayed understanding of what the work looks like, right? And especially, like you said, if you've worked with one particular client and you have improved or opened the roads in other areas, and then they're like, I want this man, though, make that happen, right? Girl, the man is not for you. The man is not yours, and there's a reason. And some people don't realize if you keep pushing that, you keep forcing that, you're going to look around and find out why he wasn't for you, right? You might get knocked upside your head. All kinds of terrible things might start happening to you. But they start to look like, oh, yeah, you made these other things happen, so why can't you? And what they're not understanding is those things were meant for you, right? Your name was on them in some way. We just had to clear the cobwebs. We had to fast track your access to it. But your name was already on it. God is saying no here. And if we tamper with this, we tampering with some other stuff that you might not want, but they don't like that. And then that's when you get the fickleness of the public. That's when it's like, well, she was good. I used to love her, but she couldn't make this thing happen. So I don't really know if she's talented anymore. And it's like, damn, negate my whole talent because of this one thing that you can't accept for yourself. Okay, that's interesting.
And then you try to be honest with them. Because with my client, it was more for a job situation. And something, but like the guy situation you're talking about, you'll see us so many times, and you fight so hard to just be like I'm genuinely trying to help you. Like this person you want, he's not my man. Like he is. I have no idea. I have no interest. I have no ulterior motive with this situation. I don't even know this man. You're my client, and I'm trying to do my best for you. Why wouldn't I want the best for you? Like, why? Like, what is it about me that makes you think I'm trying to get in the way of your success, sus? Like, let's be honest. But it's hard when they're in that like mindset, and then they're just like, no, he's the one I want. Mm-hmm. He's the one I want. I mean, I just bailed him out of jail, and he does have two other girls on me, but he's my baby daddy, and he's the one I want. Okay. And I'm like, ma'am, what? Ma'am, what? No, for real. They'll be like, yeah, I like did just bail him out of jail, and he does have like three other women, but I know he's meant for me. And I'm like, sometimes I just have to remove myself.
I have a limit though. I'm very I have limits, honey. Okay. When I first started pulling tarot, especially, you would get those love people. Those are the ones. Every week they want to come. It's either a new person or it's the same person. Something different changed. He called me today. So is he changing how he feels about me? I need to know. And my readings were so cheap that people felt compelled to do that until I started raising my prices. Now you're going to have to aggravate your bank account if you want to aggravate my spirits. How about that? And then even still, I have boundaries, right? You come to me three times in a row, three times in general about the same person or situation. If you haven't applied anything else that we spoke about, I'm not seeing you no more. I'm not waking up my energies. I'm not pulling no cards. I'm referring you to a friend or I'm telling you to go to hell. Because either way, you're going to have to get the message, right? And you're not going to continue to exhaust me. My gifts are for greater things. And love is a beautiful thing, right? I'm happy to bring people who are meant to be together together.
Of course. Right?
I love to do.
But when it's right, it's so great.
Right. But I would also like to use my mediumship to find missing children. I would like to do other more powerful things. And I can't do that if I'm sitting here pulling cards about your third baby daddy who got somebody else pregnant who might get locked up next week.
Girl, I'm telling you. I was talking to my man, a good friend of mine, like last week or something. We got some projects we're trying to figure out. And I'm really like, we're really trying to figure out how we can make this new thing happen together, right? And I'm just like, it's so frustrating to me because I have the equivalent of a doctorate when it comes to my spiritual practice. Mm-hmm. That is how long I have been doing this, all right? I've already crossed the threshold into doing this for like more than half of my life. And mm-hmm. so it's, and like to know that I've dedicated so much time to something and whatnot, and then you're really on my line. You really text me right now about this baby daddy. And I'm just like, this is what I'm using this for. Like, I'm just like, this can't be my purpose. I was like, this can't be it. I have the equivalent of a doctorate in my hand. And it's like, it's like someone with a PhD trying to go and teach elementary schoolers how to color. Like, I'm, you know, like maybe someone's gonna do it. I just don't think it's for me. It's just, I feel like I have my knowledge, my talents, they're better used elsewhere.
Yeah. I agree. It's a mess.
Yeah. I feel like there's probably no there's no practitioner who doesn't have some kind of baby daddy story.
Oh yeah. Sometimes I was the baby daddy story. Sometimes, you know, I want to believe that God has brought me together with somebody. My toxic trait, my fatal flaw, my toxic trait was always like, I feel like we have a spiritual connection. And we did. They were meant to be my patient, right? They were meant to be my client. And I was trying to love them. So I had to evolve a little bit because that tie is real. Spirit did bring this person into my life. But not for you to lay down with them. This man has problems. Please go fix it. Go cleanse that man and send him on his way.
I feel like sometimes I feel like my toxic spiritual trait is a bit of disobedience. You know, I my whole life I was never really interested in partnership, and then the first person I'd ever really decided to be with, we're engaged now. So I'm pretty much, yeah. I don't know. Love has never been my problem. My problem has been listening, yeah, because I feel like spirit will guide me in a certain direction, and I'm just like, but I think it's stupid, you know, like I feel like sometimes they'll put me in front of something, whatever, and I've really had to learn patience. Like the person I am today, I have not always been this person. I don't know where the level of patience, kindness, and empathy, like I don't know how it took time to make me into the person I am today. Because that was the time of my life, I've been like, fuck this, and you. I'm not doing this. I would have been like, me, jump into the fire for this? No.
Right.
You just gonna have to burn by yourself. I used to be very, very unsympathetic, honestly. But it's like, as I've grown, as I have like, just dealt with more people, understood people better. That's one thing about this calling. It has to be a calling, and it will teach you things about yourself that you never knew, because you really, really see people at their worst, their best, their most vulnerable, their most desperate. I feel like there's very few professions where you can see people as bare as you see them here. Like maybe a psychiatrist, girl. Maybe therapy is the only other place you'll get to see people, and maybe lawyers, but that's about it.
Yeah. And at such extremes too, right? Because I have clients, faithful clients, loyal clients that I love and I've worked with for years, and I've seen them through the range of emotions, right? They've come to me when they were destitute, couldn't get a job, couldn't keep their man, X, Y, and Z happening, they can't get pregnant. And then I've helped them to bring the baby into the world and also help them to get the job of their dreams so they can move their family into a bigger home. And it's like, wow, you know, when you do the work really works, and people trust you with their life, and they trust you with their problems. They trust you with their triumphs too. They trust you with the beautiful things that happen in their lives. But it definitely is not for the faint of heart, and it's not for the weary. Like, I feel bad. There's a lot of conversation, what's the word, controversy, that's happening online now about the spiritual community, because people are saying, look at all these witches that came out in 2020, they're going back to work, or they're turning back Christian now. They're shutting down their sites and they don't know what the hell they're talking about. And it's real, because if you
were— Oh my God, really? Tell me more about that.
So many girls who became like TikTok witches and had millions of followers are denouncing the occult now and going back to Christianity because tarot is demonic, or whatever they were doing is demonic. And then other people are just going back to work, right? Like, they picked up some cars, they started doing whatever they were doing because we were in quarantine. And now they're like, oh, this is not as lucrative as it was when people had PPP loans, so I need to get a job again. They're going back to Target. They're doing whatever they were doing, right? And there's no shade to that. But it's to say, like you said, when you are called to it, you have to trudge through all of the valleys of it. When the business is slow, when your clients hate you, when they come back and they love you again, when they're going through it, when they're celebrating, like, it's your calling, and spirit is going to drag you through the mud through every single aspect of the calling.
What do you think, like, keeps you coming back, you know, like, for you? Because I said before we got started, there's been a few times where I'm just like, I need a hiatus. I need a minute. And then I come back, and sometimes I'm working harder than I was when I stopped, when I went on the break. And so what for you kind of keeps you in, like, keeps inspiring you to keep coming back and keep practicing?
I can't stop. Trust me, I have tried. I have tried so many times. I have shut these altars down. I have said, I've sold things, right? Like, sold my personal altar items to really stick it to spirit. Like, I love you, but I'm done. And then I'll go somewhere and somebody will gift me the same statue I just sold. Somebody be like, I don't know, I found this in my dad's basement. Do you want this? You're the only person I know who knows Yemaya. And I'll be like, oh, leave me alone. You know? So for me, it is that deeply ingrained. It's in my blood. It's in my culture. And I'm the generational curse breaker in my family. So that means that everything that everybody neglected is on my shoulders. My family's spiritual cuadro, spiritual frame is huge, but no one was really properly tending to those spirits. And so the first sensitive, highly sensitive person, super empathetic child that shows up in the bloodline is going to get all of that. So that's me. So even when I try not to show up, I still have to. But I really am... I'm married to spirit in that way, where it is a love-hate relationship, right? It's like, sometimes you wake up, you look at your man, and you like, ugh, I don't know why, but fuck it, I'm here, and I'm locked in, right? I'm going to be here tomorrow. I'm going to stick beside him. And so whenever I'm having really, really difficult days, even if I've let my altar go dark, I know that I need to go and sit still. Right? Even when I'm struggling to understand the reason or the purpose behind something, spirit, why did you put me in this situation? Why did I have to deal with betrayal in that way? I always know innately that there is a greater lesson, that spirit will reward me for sticking it through. And so my faith is just that strong. I can't turn it away. And the last thing I'll say is that in the time that I've been doing this work in this way, I've noticed that they say God works in mysterious ways. Every single time I need a lesson or a message, that's the client that I get at that time. If I'm super sad about a love situation, I'll get a client that I have to uplift in love. If I'm super frustrated or I can't see clearly about a family thing, the client that walks into my space will have that same situation. And whatever spirit divines for them is what I needed to hear from me at the time, and they still pull me through.
No, I hear you. You know, and I feel like that's probably one of the, that's a common theme amongst a lot of practitioners, a lot of us. I can't tell you how often I've heard someone say, I practice because I can't do anything else. Spirit won't let me. Like, even, you know, I have tried to run. You know, you think I tried to leave. What do you mean stay? I tried. They would not let me. A lot of these, you know, these 2020s, you know, these recent practitioners, I feel like they really don't understand what it's like to be called to this. You know, they went to YouTube Academy and, you know, they got their, they got whatever it is that they thought they needed. And they don't realize that this kind of thing is so draining. It's so ridiculous. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. It's just downright annoying sometimes. And so most of the times it's just, they keep pulling you back and you can't leave. So you're these are gilded handcuffs.
No, 1000%, which is why I stress the importance of the cleansing. And I tell people exactly what I'm telling you, I need to hear from myself. If I'm telling you to stay on top of your spiritual hygiene, it's because I know that it works. And the weariness, the fatigue, all of that goes away when I stay consistent. But sometimes you're just so damn tired that you don't want to make the bath. You don't want to take the bath. You don't want to say the prayer. But you still, you know that that's the medicine that you need to take when you're sick. You need it to get better. Sometimes you don't want to drink the NyQuil. It don't taste great. You don't want to drink the bitters and the bush tea, but you don't like coughing up your lungs either. So you got to do it. You can't do both. You can't complain and want to get well. And so the same thing is true when you're spiritually ill or spiritually fatigued, which I face often, especially because I am in the 21 divisions practice. We call it a caballo, but I'm a trance medium, right? So spirit can possess my body. I clean people of bad energy. So that takes a toll on my physical body as well. I do limpias or go into people's homes and businesses and spiritually clear energy. I'm literally mopping and sweeping and wiping down walls and saging and turning people around and bathing them. And my physical body takes a toll on that too. The baths do help. You know?
So let's get into what you just said. You said you are kind of a spiritual medium. What was the word you used?
Just now?
Yeah, in 21 divisions, they call it a, you say cabello? Okay. So what kind of priestess are we working with here? Well, if you even call yourself that, I should say. Where does it start with? What is your title in your practice?
Mm-hmm. So, well, my name is Che Alexander. And essentially, how I introduce myself to people who may not be a part of the spiritual community is a spiritual advisor, a spiritual consultant, a wellness coach, right? Because I have many different modalities. In terms of my spiritual traditions and practices, I am an espiritista, which essentially is a psychic medium in the spiritism tradition. A lot of folks know about Allan Kardec and it's like seance trance mediums. So that's what an espiritista is. I'm also a bruja or witch, but it's like a working witch, healer, medicine witch in the 21 divisions tradition, and also a caballo, which means that spirit is able to mount me. And then I'm an initiate of Santeria Lukumi. I'm not a santera, but I am a devotee of the Orisha, and you know, I work within those communities. It's specifically doing misas as an espiritista to help people to connect with their spirit guides and their spiritual cuadro. And then I'm also a hoodoo. So I use a lot of my medicinal medicine and root work to help people heal, connect them with their ancestry, and then also to manifest things that they desire in their lives.
Okay. And you 21 divisions. So where does your aspect of the practice originate? This is the Dominican version or... this is the Dominican version, right? Or I think there's some in Puerto Rico as well.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. And I guess we have to thank colonialism for this beautiful marriage. You know, I hate the way that that imperialism invaded our spaces, but we were able to create some beautiful, powerful things from it. The people being one, and then some of our traditions, right? So 21 Divisions is the marriage between Catholicism and Haitian voodoo. And a lot of Dominicans, it's also known as Dominican voodoo. So a lot of Dominicans practice it. There is also a similar practice called Sanse, which is essentially Puerto Rican voodoo, which is 21 Divisions plus Puerto Rican, it's called Seminism. So to make a very long story short, my family, my father's family, is from Isabela, Puerto Rico, which is on the west side of the island. And this is the closest side of the island to Dominican Republic and Haiti. Now, something that I recently found out like 2 weeks ago, so new to me. When I was coming up in this tradition, till this day, all of the strongest mediums I've ever met have been from Isabela, Puerto Rico specifically. Right? I've met strong mediums from all over the world, but the strongest, the sharpest sight have all been from Isabela and the neighboring town of Aguadilla. So I'm trying to understand what the hell is going on in this place that your sight is so strong and your connection to spiritism is strong.
Yeah, like what y'all feeding them kids?
Okay. So of course it's Haiti. And they might stone me to death for saying this, right? I don't know where this is going to show up. Puerto Ricans, I love y'all, mi gente, I love y'all, but we gotta be honest about our history, right? The Haitian influence, specifically on the west side of the island, is very powerful. And there were a lot of refugees that fled Haiti after the revolution and came to Aguadilla and settled in Isabela and neighboring towns. And there's also very specific neighborhoods in Isabela and Aguadilla that are highly concentrated African population. They were slaves that never intermarried. And so this is Palo Obia Voodoo that is stuck in the dirt of the island. You know what I mean? So my father's family comes from that side, and my mother's family is from the Bahamas. So my mother's family is from the Bahamas. Her father's family is from the South, essentially Africa. And then my father's family being from over here. So there's a heavy Haitian influence. There's an Obia influence in my life. There is Gullah Geechee influence. So I really am Spirit's child, but specifically 21 Divisions comes from my father's west side of the island.
Okay. Okay. I knew a bit about this already, just in terms of the geography and everything and all that with the colonialism and everything. You know, we love that. Mm-hmm. But it's good to hear and like to tell people again and to get that perspective out on during the video. So great little history lesson there. Yeah. Now what I will say is that I find you hilarious. So we're just like, what could possibly be making them so strong?
What the hell?
You know, the voodoo that exists on the Haiti side of the island is very different than a lot of the other practices that you see like anywhere else. Part of what makes the voodoo, the spirituality that exists on the Haiti side of the island, so potent, especially in like the countryside and whatever, is like you said, they weren't as exposed as other places. You know, there wasn't as much intermarrying, you know. When the Haitian Revolution happened in early 1800s, like 60 to 70% of the slaves that were on the island who had only been there for like 50 years. And so the memory and the connection to the parts of Africa where they had come from, you know, to our great grandmother and great grandfather, spiritual practices, that was still very much fresh in their minds. It was still something that they had that connection to, you know. It was reminiscent of probably, you know, a first generation American. They probably still understand Creole. They probably can speak it a bit. They still have that connection to their culture. And so, regardless of what people think, I think the spirituality that exists on the continent of Africa, in the central and western areas within those tribes, has been so well preserved and probably so well developed over the years. It is an absolute shame that colonization has done so much damage to so many of these practices and pushed so much Christian and Catholic influence to the point where you know, there are lots of people in Africa, just like in the Western areas of Africa and places like Ghana and Nigeria and you know, modern day areas where the slave trade happened, who will tell you straight up, like, we don't do voodoo, okay? We're not about that voodoo life. It's disgusting. We are Christians. They'll be like, you know, brothers and sisters on the West, don't believe the hype. We don't want this voodoo thing either. Just like in Haiti, you know, especially if you're like in polite society, no voodoo, please. We are Christians. That's all we have ever been. That's all we are, and that's all we ever will be.
Oh my gosh. No voodoo, please. No thanks.
No. And so we have to be thankful for those people in the countryside, for the people who weren't as influenced and weren't as, you know, polluted and weren't as pressured to let go of their practices. Mm-hmm. And so I actually went to Puerto Rico last year in October.
Yeah, how was it?
Yeah, that was, I loved it. I am so ready to go back.
It's beautiful.
No, I'm about ready to go back, like, for real. I am done. It was probably one of the best, like, vacations I'd been on. And the people are great. I just love the whole vibe there. And so it's, right now I'm in a moment where I've been doing a lot of research in terms of voodoo, its language origins, its cultural origins, and kind of trying to get definitive lines of, like, okay, if I could do a map, like, where this man or woman started, mm-hmm. what boat picked them up, what path he took, what island he landed on, what area of Haiti that was on, what happened, and how likely he was to have migrated anywhere else on the island. But it's so hard to get that information. It's so hard to get it, like, because there's so much misinformation, and then obviously they didn't document, they didn't think it was that important to document a bunch of slaves. so we're doing our best. We're doing our best to retrace their steps, I'm telling you.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know if they were so bad at keeping it, writing it down or documenting it. I think there was definitely a level of trust too. You know, for those, in those places where it was legal for you to read and write and be literate as a slave, why am I going to write this thing down for these people to find it? Who knows what they're going to do with it, you know? So it wasn't safe to document it either. You know, we had to hold faith that what we share with our children would get passed down. And unfortunately, a lot of our more recent ancestors, I would say, sold us out for the hope or the dream of assimilation, of integration, right? All of these things. We wanted to denounce where we came from just to fit in more. And now, you know, there's some this reclamation movement happening. People saying, actually, I don't want to be a part of this. This shit is falling apart anyway. Where do I really come from? Where's my blood from? How can I honor our people greater? But we are at a deficit. We have a little bit more work to do to get back connected.
And where you are right now in your practice, and, well, how are you kind of combating that, you know? Like, what's your part? How do you see yourself in the grand scheme of all this spiritual politics? And how are you moving through it all?
Girl, get me out of it. I don't want no parts of it. I want to do my little one, too, my little one, twos. Me and my clients, and send them out into the world. But honestly, I think that's my first obligation, right? My first obligation is to remain with integrity for myself and my own practice, not to be out here selling things that I'm not using, giving advice that I won't take. That's the first part of it. And then being honest and having integrity with the clients that come to me, right? Not just doing things for money, not teaching them how to harm people because it's easy to do. Asking them, what's your intention for this? Why do you want to connect with your ancestors? This is how you do it properly. We were speaking about this off camera earlier. Like, so many people are such in a rush to elevate. You want to be Mambo, you want to be Hungan, and you just got initiated yesterday. I see it even with my herbalism practice. You literally took one online herbalism course, and now you're selling tea blends and tinctures. Now, God forbid somebody was to drop dead from ingesting what you took. You don't even take your own medicine. You haven't even tested it on yourself. So too many people are in a rush to elevate when they haven't really sat with their practice. So that's the other part of my work, is to make sure people are doing what they are supposed to do for themselves before they call themselves psychic, bruja, medium, whatever. And then my hope is to really continue to grow my spiritual community in terms of like network, so that I'm in close collaboration with other mambos and hungans and houses and bisayon, so that we are talking about the practices. We are checking each other. There's some kind of checks and balances. If there's one godchild that comes to me and tries to destroy my house, you need to know about it as my fellow practitioner, in case they come trying to run up in your shit and break your house down too. Right? But we're not having those conversations with each other. So that's part of my real work, is to keep reaching out, branching out, creating friendships, creating community, atmospheres, environments, events for us to come together and really build a solid network.
You know, it has not been easy for sure. It has not been easy just like building any kind of network. Of course, I have like, everybody's got their lives, everybody's got their own things, you know, and then you're just like, well, what would the project look like? Mm-hmm. You know, what would the collaborative opportunity look like? And then when you figure it out, the first question is, well, how does it benefit me? What do I do? I mean, how can I like get ahead with this once it does happen? It's not easy to get to that point where you can collaborate with people for stuff in the, within the spiritual community, because there's so much division, you know. But it's not the end of the world, you know. I wonder a lot about how we can help support each other for sure, you know. I remember I was actually talking to somebody, and we had chit chat a few times actually. We're decent, you know. We're cool, and there was somebody who had been working with me, you know, taking some classes or whatever. And I think they couldn't afford to continue, which is cool. And so, but they still wanted like some help, and they still wanted like certain things and certain participations and all that. But I, you know, for me, the price was the price that it was going to be at that time. Because the person just literally wasn't in a position to pay for all of the services that they wanted. So they went and initiated into somebody else's house because they had a cheaper price for the Lavitet ceremony, which was fine too. Honestly, I was just like, as long as you are being taken care of, fine. And the person that they went to was a decent person, a decent human being. I knew that person wasn't going to do no messed up stuff or anything. They were going to do their best and do right by that person. So I was like, yeah, if that's the person you're choosing, I think it's cool. But I didn't tell them like how close me and that other practitioner were, like that we had talked before, that it was more than just me saying, oh, they're cool. So then they come and then they were talking to me some type of way, a little different. And so I had to call up that practitioner. And I was like, yo, man, I home so-and-so just niched into your house. I don't know if you guys are like, you know, this has changed the relationship. They're no longer just somebody taking classes or whatever, like they are initiated into your house. You know, you're probably primarily responsible for their spiritual development. And right. Now they're saying some stuff to me that I don't know if you noticed, but it sit well with me. So I don't know if you guys are, I don't know what kind of plans you have for this person, but you might want to be careful. And it was fine. They had already kind of like peeped game a bit. They kind of saw who this, the kind of person this client was. And I remember I was sitting there and I was just thinking to myself, like, God, what would it be like if people were as cooperative as I am being right now? You know, like I remember there have been botanica wars, you know, for you stealing somebody's godchildren. I don't know if they were real big in New York and South Florida. Oh, God, man, these botanica wars.
Girl, the ego is huge. The ego is so huge. And I talk to people, talk to you till I'm blue in the face about checking again yourself and your intentions. Why? Oh man, my computer needs to charge. Why do you want to be here? Right? Why is this calling to you? Whether it be Voodoon, whether it be 21 Divisions, anything, why are you press to be in community? And I don't say that with judgment. I say that sternly and firmly, because you have to know the answer, because if you don't, that's how you get taken advantage of. And a lot of times I find that people like the aesthetic They like what they believe is the community or what they think the community looks and feels like. Especially in Santo, you see people with their eleques, their collares, and you're like, oh, wow, that's a gang. Look at these people. Chango, yeah, yeah, my, yeah, I want to be down. And you don't know. Some of these people don't have any gifts whatsoever, right? Like, we all have gifts, but they're not practitioners. They went to Ifa to save their lives. They went to get this one particular ceremony because they needed it for their lives. And now you are about to throw your life savings away to get initiated into something you don't even understand because you're watching what people look like. Mm. They look regal in their robes and their head ties, but you don't even know what they're doing there. So why do you want to be here? What is really, really calling you? What do you feel like could be your purpose here? Now we're working with something. Everything else is ego.
There was a young man I had come into contact with, and homie was paying, I think, $21,000 or $22,000 for what was it? His crown, I believe it's called. What? And the thing is, he had been paying it across 4 or 5 years on a payment plan, working towards paying this. And I was just sitting there, and I was just like, he's paying this man's bills.
Mm-hmm.
He's paying his bills. He's sending money like every so often, working towards this. And the thing is, and somebody else recently, they're like, I want to do this ceremony. I want to do it. I want to get past this. I want to do this ceremony number two. And I'm like, bro, chill. It's not that deep. Like, I will be the first to tell you, initiation is not that deep. It's not. Because no, it's not. It's not. It's really is not. Because at the end of the day, you could go to this ceremony right now and not get what you think you're about to get, because your path is different than the person who you keep looking to. You know, you see this person and you're just like, I want to be just like them, and that's your motivation. So you think that initiation is going to get you through stuff like this. It is not. Half the time, it is not. Initiation will bring is very important. The ceremonies are very important, and it helps bring you closer and helps transform you into what you were meant for. Mm-hmm. All right. And that's what makes it so effective and so powerful. But people think that they're going to like initiate and they're going to come out freaking dream walking, astral projecting, you know, spirit talking, spiritual work doing, fucking like they think. Yes, they think they're going to initiate, and they're going to come out like about to with spiritual freaking wings on or something. And I'm sitting here and I'm just like, some of the greatest people, some of the most effective practitioners are so truly led by spirit that regardless of the kind of initiation they've had, they can still, they still get where they need to get. They still are who they need to be.
Every time. Even in my case, right? So I am initiated into Lukumi. Eventually, long term down the line, should I choose to take that path, I am supposed to get crowned, right? That is for me. But in my actual physical 3D life, will that ever happen? Probably not, because my work is with the dead, right? And so in Lukumi, there's a phrase, sin muerto no hay santo. Without the dead, there can be no saints, right? Because saints are elevated into sainthood after you die. So when you are working with the Orisha, only the santeras, the people who are crowned, can possess spirit, can do certain things. But I can't touch that because my work with the dead is not done. But you can't ever come to me and tell me that I'm not truly anointed, right? If you ever, anybody who's been in spiritual practice with me knows how gifted I am, but I don't have any crowns. So you can't pull my coattail, though, because I can go toe-to-toe with somebody who has 15 years with the crown, because that's how much spirit I have on me. And I don't say that with arrogance. I say that to say, like you said, when you are anointed, when it's in your blood, some shit is just extra. It's confetti. Mm-hmm. And you need it for extra protection. Yes, it definitely can help you with that. It can help to stabilize your gifts and condition your spirit so they're not running amok. But that don't mean that you don't have the gifts at all. You don't have no ache at all. That's not true.
And it's like you said, stabilize, you know, it is to help in the transition, but like if you don't got it, you don't got it. It's not gonna give it to you. It's not. Whatever it is, if you're lucky, maybe it does. If it was meant for you, it certainly will. But it is crazy to me how much emphasis people put on initiation. Like, that is supposed to, like, that's, I don't know. I don't even know. And so it really is, because most of the ceremonies that I've always been who I am today. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just an inevitable next step in my journey. I had never been waiting for initiation. And I say this sometimes, the kind of formal initiation, the way we define it here, is not something that my mother has ever done, or many mm-hmm. people in the who come from the countryside. There are so many people who practice that old traditional voodoo who don't do this. They don't, because it's in their bloodline. It's literally a familial thing. You learn with your family, of course. There's somebody in this part of the family who does this and that, and you just kind of nurture things on the land with the people within the practice. But they're not looking for a house to initiate into. And I know we're not all lucky to have been born in the countryside and, you know, exposed to that kind of thing. I get it. But it just goes to show you that some of the most effective people did none of the things that so many are trying to do.
1,000%. And I don't want to take away, especially, you know, I'll speak to Lukumi, take away from the work that is done there. And those ceremonies are days long, sometimes weeks long. They take months.
Of course.
You need animals and food. So they cost money.
And they're important. Mm-hmm. And they are important. They're effective. You know, like, even with everything I'm saying, we still host ceremonies. We still help people mm-hmm. go through them. We still do this. So, of course, there's still value in it. But, like, I really think that it's a different kind of value than what social media has, like, tried to make people believe. It's like they've rebranded initiations and ceremonies to be something that traditional practitioners, like, have never seen it, you know, as this thing that we don't talk about it the way that we talk about it here in the States. This new spiritual trend situation, it's got people looking at spirituality as something you can almost buy into, you know. Once you do it, they like hit you with a name tag, a label. It's almost like paying for your black belt, you know.
You did it.
Yeah. Instead of earning it, I'm just like, what?
Yeah,
and that black belt means a lot, you know. It does mean something. It says something about the kind of martial artist you are. But Lord, you if you pay for that belt, let's be honest, you don't got the kind of juice that others do.
Well, but let's talk about this too, right? Because let's talk about the reality that the real work starts after initiation, right? I think the larger problem is that people think that initiation is the pinnacle. Okay, boom, I've been initiated, I've been crowned, I received this lua, this whatever, whatever. But the real skill and the real work of that initiation, that ceremony, come after, when you have to embody the traits of that lua, of that orisha, when you're being tested, right? When somebody is really trying to disrespect you and you've been crowned obatalana, you got to be patient and be respectful of people. That's when your initiation matters, and people don't have that because they don't have the spiritual discipline before they got initiated.
Okay. Me personally, the initiation to me is almost like a backstage pass to more work, all right? It is. It's your backstage pass to service, okay? It's a nice, beautiful plaque that tells you that you've got a lot more to do. So prepare yourself to do work. That's what it is.
And now that you are initiated, there's no more excuses. There's no more, I didn't know. There's no, now you have an obligation. This is your loi. And you know exactly what they like and how it's supposed to be done and on what day. So now what's your excuse? If anything, it gives you more permission to get beat up on the other side, because they will hand it to you.
Okay. Girl, you said it. You absolutely said it. Because the things you can get away with pre, you know, is not what you can do post. Okay. Because the thing, and then God forbid you weren't prepared properly. They didn't really explain to you what you're going to do. They didn't like I get you into the mindset of where you needed to get to. And then afterwards, you're just like, nah, man, this isn't what I thought. But you're one of the unlucky ones. And now, then people won't let you leave. Not in spirits won't let you leave.
And now it's done more harm than good, right? I see it a lot, too, where people get initiated, they get pots, they get all of these things you have to tend to. But they don't have, again, the spiritual discipline. So now there's flies in the water. This is smelling funny. You haven't fed so-and-so. Now your spirits are angry. And guess what? They're going to turn all this shit upside down. They're taking all of your money, all of the love in your life because they feel neglected. But you were so pressed to get scratched, so pressed to get initiated, that now you have initiated yourself into poverty. Congrats.
Yeah. Initiate yourself into things. Like, this is... I couldn't say it better. I don't even need to add any 2 cents. You bought the whole thing. Yeah.
I've seen it.
Because you're right. And I feel for the people who don't understand this and are trying so desperately to get to something that doesn't actually make sense for them. Mm-hmm. I feel for them more than anybody else, because if they did understand, if they did, like, if they knew what I knew, then they'd be talking different. They'd be walking different, let me tell you. I love being a voodoo priestess. Even if I had another job, even if I had another career, because I have other things going on outside of my spirituality. You know, I got other projects and stuff. That's my personal life, my own personal passions. But even with all of those, I could never not do what I'm doing right now. Mm. Even if there was no one to see me do it. If there was no social media, if there was no thing, if there was nothing but me in a dark room and nothing to do, I would find a way, because this is it for me, you know? And it's a shame that so many people don't really know what that's like. And then they try and, like, initiate, because they think, like, that's gonna make me understand it, that's gonna make me see it. I was like, regardless of initiation, you have to know this like the truth that you know about yourself, you know, that it has to be something that's like indelible. You there when you know nothing, you need to know this.
Yeah, 1000%. I think people are constantly looking for community, and inherently that's not a bad thing, but it is the approach that we take to it. And at some point, people have to be honest about, and I'm talking about people in these spiritual houses, these practitioners, et cetera. You have to be honest about so much of the work being individual, too. Like, it's nice to go to the ceremonies, the events, the dances, the bembes, the tambores, the this, the that, the palo, the fiestas. But you still have to tend to your spirits at home. You can't just be spiritual when you get in the community. It's the same as going to church only on Sundays, but you never open your Bible at home. You don't have a relationship with God separate from that. It's dangerous and it's inauthentic.
You stole the words right out of my mouth. No, I was just about to bring up church. It really, really is. It's like, I think, you know, there's that relationship between spirituality and religion, and religion and spirituality. And, like, there's a lot of, like, there's a lot of, like, butting heads. You're not understanding where one ends and where the other one is going to start. Mm-hmm. We could do a whole nother thing on just that. But I think if you wanted to leave people with, like, a message, a thought, and something that you think they need to know, what would it be?
In general, regards to spirituality?
Sure.
I would say, really be honest with yourself. Right? I need people to be more honest with themselves overall, in general, and then especially when it comes to spirituality. So what does that mean? What does it look like? Just like we just said, be honest about why you come into this. What's your intention? Do you want to connect with ancestors? Do you want to develop your own psychic gifts? There's no wrong answer, but no, don't just say, I want to get my feet wet. I want to see, I want to learn, I want to understand. You need to know what you're trying to see and understand. And then be honest with yourself too. Once you find a place or space or person, Be honest about your capacity. Don't overpromise and underdeliver to yourself, to your mentor, to your spiritual community, to your ele, to your house, to your spirits, because that becomes a spiritual contract that you owe. When I sit in front of Santa Marta and I say, hey, if you give me this job, I'm going to give you 6 dozen roses, and she gets me the job and I never get those roses, guess who's getting laid off in 6 months? Because we made an agreement, right? And of course, you have a relationship with your spirit. You understand all the things. But be honest. Don't come into these situations and saying, I'm going to be the best priestess ever. I want to have the biggest house and all the godchildren. And then you can't even meditate for 5 minutes on your own. Don't say that you want to dedicate your time to service and charity and hope, because those are the tenets of Espiritismo. But then when somebody calls you for advice, you get mad and you want to charge them. I don't work for free. Well, you said you wanted to work for faith and charity. This is what this looks like sometimes, you know? So just be honest with yourself.
Mm-hmm. Excellently put. Excellently put. Be honest with yourself. If this truly is not right for you, it is totally fine. It is okay to not know. It is okay be unsure. It is okay to still be on the journey, and you don't need to, and use your discernment, mm-hmm. you know, use your discernment, because most of us who are logical people, like from what I've seen of people in the world, once they, like, there's a reason they say hindsight is 20/20. You are mm-hmm. capable of reason. You definitely are. It's usually that time when you're operating from a place of need, a place of desperation, a place of sadness or depression, or anxiety. It's usually when you let yourself be overwhelmed by what you're feeling in that moment that you forget who you really are or mm-hmm. who you could be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so part of being honest with yourself and getting to know, like, what you need to know to get to where you want to be is taking the time to be discerning, okay? You know, I promise you, there is absolutely no rush when it comes to your spiritual path. What is yours is coming for you. It is already on the way. And you will miss out on it trying to create a life that makes sense for someone else, because you haven't taken the time to really understand, to be discerning about where you are, what you need, and what is good for you versus what's good for somebody else.
Right. You got to take your time. You have to take your time.
Well, look at us. Look at us. We made it happen. Thank you so much, Che. I appreciate it, girl.
You're so welcome.